Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. This morning on the show, we'll have some news and notes coming up a little bit later on. My man, Jonathan Sheppard, announced his retirement, his American retirement. He's still going to have a limited string in Ireland, but we'll kind of look back a little bit on his career and talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. Also, a little bit later, we'll be joined by our friend Tim Wilkin from the Times Union, semi-retired now as the sports columnist, but still concentrating on horse racing for the Times Union. We'll do a little recap of 2020, talk potential Eclipse Awards and whatnot with Tim coming up a little bit later on. But top of the show, all eyes this afternoon on Gulfstream Park with a mandatory Rainbow Six payout. So I thought we'd get some ideas from our friend Ron Nicoletti on some of the Rainbow races. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How you doing?
Pretty good. And we were talking on the handicapping show earlier, my colleague Brian Addo and I, and I mentioned it is just, it's phenomenal down there in Florida, the Rainbow Six, and really the Pick Six for years has been that way in various jurisdictions. It has taken off. The $2 Pick Six for years was super popular out in California, pretty popular in New York, and then other venues not so much so. This jackpot bet now, other venues are doing it, and with some success, but man, it just skyrockets. I mean, it seems like it was only 2-3 weeks ago there was a mandatory down at Gulfstream, and now they come back as the pot grows and grows and grows each day. Bettors love that rainbow down at Gulfstream.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We used to watch it, like, you know, going back 5 or 6 years ago, the first day they would bet 25,000. Then it would build and build. Now it just goes up. And we keep saying to ourselves, was it last week it was mandatory payout? So it's gone so far. It's amazing. You know, you expect like maybe $4 million today. And, you know, we got a couple of new people in management here. And their thought process is once it gets to that, you know, $1 million mark or $2 million mark, have a mandatory day. So rather than let it go until it's $20 million and then, you know, people put in $5,000 tickets and we got no shot, you know. So yeah. This is better.
No, I totally agree. And we were talking on the show earlier. I'm thinking probably about $6 million today, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm always wrong. So I would say $5 million. So I never get it right. I always say, well, it'd be about $3 million and it's $8 million, you know, so you just never know. And you know what it is when you watch the money as it comes in, you know, we get that big thing on the screen and you see those last couple of dumps, whether you're coming from the simulcast places, it's just amazing, you know, that they, you know, it goes from $3 million to $4 million. You go, you know, it's almost like watching the lottery, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, as I say, it's just a phenomenon down there and it's a lot of fun. And the 20 cent increment, people can put together a nice ticket for a reasonable amount of money. You know, you get up in that $60-$80 range, much less $144 or something. You can have a ticket that at the $2 increment would have been a whale-sized ticket, but you can have that at the 20-cent increment. Take your shot and play around and maybe have a very, very nice day down there. I'm assuming you guys will have a ticket displayed. You'll have a ticket displayed during the afternoon?
Yeah, I got one. I put it together in 97-20, and I guess the big information is, you know, that the analyze it scratched out of the tropical turf. So the 6-horse, that was going to be the favorite in there for Chad Brown, was announced yesterday. He had a quarter crack, so he will not be running, which either, you know, in some ways people might have been thinking a single in it, so you have to make a couple adjustments. That's the only big scratch in the sequence, you know, so not too many scratches on the card. We got one in the seventh, which was a, you know, a long shot, so that you got to pay attention to it, analyze it out.
Okay, very interesting. I did hear that was floating around yesterday, but now we know analyze it out of the featured stakes race this afternoon. We'll hit on that in a few minutes, but first let's take a look at a few of these rainbow races and get your ideas. And again, you can find Ron's entire selections if you go to the Gulfstream Park website. Nice little printable page with Ron's selections every day. You can check that out as well. But let's get an idea on the seventh race. That may help people out as it is a maiden special event. Newly turned three-year-olds, a mile is the distance. Nice full field in here. Boy, this is one that you would have to think some nice horses potentially will come out of, as all the big names have some runners in this seventh race at Gulfstream. What were your thoughts?
Well, I ended up going with the three. Simovich was going to get Lasix today. Debuted here locally and finished. I thought a prompt to pace second at this level and distance for Bill Mott, who's quietly having a really good meet with Jose Ortiz, handling the second journey over the track, which I like in there. But as you mentioned, got some monster breeding in there with the 11 Rosenquist in the two first tests. Two sons of Uncle Mo, one course 750, one course 725. But I'm going to go with Simovich that I actually seen run.
And, you know, you mentioned also jockeys and whatnot, the Ortiz brothers, and I just wanted to touch on it. I had a Kay Sean last week talking some of the stakes action. I mentioned it to her. That is just, it's a phenomenal jockey colony down there, this championship meet. The Ortiz brothers, Paco Lopez, you have to watch anything he is on. Luis Saez, of course, John Velasquez, the veteran, but it really is a knockout jockey colony this season.
Yeah, and our local jock, Edgar Zayas, right up there fighting with for the leading jockey title here. You know, we're going to have Javier Castellano coming back, one of our reporters here, Phil Janik, just interviewed him, I think, yesterday. He'll be back, like, in the first week of February. He's, you know, healing from a little bit of an operation, so he should be back stronger than ever. He's doing really good. So that'll just add to the colony here.
Yeah, just phenomenal. Again, championship season underway and looking like it on the equine and the human side. All right, let's go to that stakes race we alluded to, the feature today, race number 10 at Gulfstream Park, the Tropical Turf, four-year-olds and up going a mile on the grass. And while we talk, I pulled up the win by Frostmourne going back to last November at Churchill Downs. Frostmourne took the lead, took him all the way around under Joel Rosario for Eddie Keneally. I thought off of that race, Frostmourne was very playable in here this afternoon. Casa Creed for our friend Lee Einsiedler is in off the a little bit of a dud maybe in the Breeders' Cup mile, but he's very playable as well. Boy, this is a fun field. What are your thoughts on the Tropical Turf?
Well, I did go with Casa Creed on top with the scratch of Analyzer. That Analyzer I was going to use just because every time he came off a layoff, he won a grade three, but that is not the point anymore. So Casa Creed is looking for his first victory since winning the grade two Hall of Fame during 2019 drops. He faced grade one competition, you know, in three consecutive races, includes that third up there where you are in the four-star, Dave. I just think the drop is really good for this son of Jimmy Creed by Bill Mott in there. And you're absolutely right about Frostmourne. That horse, you know, is 4-for-6 at a mile. He looks like the best miler in the field, and he got a 102 buyer when that race you just showed at Churchill Downs. So he's got some motor in him.
Yeah, he looks very tough to me. We'll see how that plays out. Again, it's a really fun feature race this afternoon down at Gulfstream. The 11th at Gulfstream, fun race to wind up the day. And as we were talking before we went on the air, it is noted, I said earlier, people can catch your picks. And that also includes your long shot of the day every racing afternoon down at Gulfstream. And in the 11th, your long shot is in this race. It's a maiden 20 to 25 claimer, a mile on the grass. Give us your thoughts in race number 11 this afternoon.
Well, as you mentioned, got a bit of 20-to-1 shot on top in there that I'm going to use as my long shot, of course, with other horses in the Rainbow Six ticket. And it's Blue Eyed Kitten, who's wheeling back after angling out and top of stretch. He got in some traffic in that race, and he finished eighth, but it turned out to be a monster race with a trio of Next Out winners. The trainer is Steve Boudou, and he's got Miguel Vasquez riding today, which I like the jockey switch today. You know, so I just thought Blue Eyed Kitten had trouble last time, a little bit of a price, and this, maybe if this horse gets up, you can knock a few folks out of the Rainbow Six ticket. So 20-to-1 on that, a time sensitive and great show. Charlotte, I think, are the logical two in there, but I'm going to try and upset him a little bit with Blue Eyed Kitten.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And, Ron, I was looking at your Twitter feed, and I was reminded that, what was it, Friday was Beat the Expert. You were the expert on Friday. A nice, fun contest down there that fans can jump in, and you, as you, the Gulfstream handicappers kind of cycle week in and week out. How'd you make out on Friday with Beat the Expert?
Well, I started off very slow, you know, just trying to beat all the favorites, but I ended up with the four winners. I had, like, the last, they're talking about my long shot, that won the last race yesterday.
Nice.
Got bet down to 7-2, but hey, so I had four winners. I think I probably got beat because I didn't pick three chalks early on, you know, that were, you know, 1-2 shots and stuff. So, you know, it's fun. They beat me every week. I'm used to it now, you know. Acacia and I dread it when it's Beat the Expert week because we know we're going to get hammered.
And as I say, though, it's a fun contest where folks can face off with the Gulfstream handicappers. You know, with a big pool jumping in, somebody's going to have their day and take you on. That's part of the fun of it. But four win days is a pretty good day, and with your long shot coming through as well. One thing I didn't ask you at the top of the interview, what's the weather look like today?
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful down here. A little chilly for us. It's going to be 65 degrees today. And, Sonny, I'd like to tease you about that. It's, everybody will have – you'll see people around here with winter coats on, earmuffs, everything, you know. But it's gorgeous out.
Yeah, I have been – in years past, I have been down there over on the other side of the state more often than not, the Tampa side. And I have been sitting on the beach in my bathing suit and slopping the suntan lotion on, and the natives are walking by with parkas. So it's a whole different mindset. It was two or three days ago, Jason and Acacia were kind of doing the little pre-race from the paddock and both commenting on how chilly it was. And it looked pretty comfortable. I drove in this morning, my dashboard said 18 degrees. So you can... And I always go back to the story you tell of when you made your decision to move. You were in New York City, and you had that freezing rain hitting you in the face, so you were walking backwards.
Yeah, that was the day. I could mark it down. I wish I remembered the exact day of the calendar, but I said, that's it, I'm out of here. You know, going back to Jason, he comes in when it's like this with an overcoat on. He's from New York. I can't believe it. I'm shocked.
It doesn't take long to get used to that weather down there, clearly. But as I said, we live vicariously through you guys and enjoy the championship meet. And today, very special with the mandatory. And so I wanted to reach out and get some thoughts from you on the sequence. So, Ron, really appreciate the ideas. Good luck to you and everybody out there this afternoon on the Rainbow Six. And appreciate the conversation. We'll talk again.
Yeah, you got it. Take care.
Appreciate it. Ron Nicoletti from Gulfstream Park. Again, Rainbow Six mandatory. They're a little over a million. I'm thinking they'll get up to about six today would be kind of my guess. And we've heard a couple of estimates, a little lower, a little higher, as we've talked this morning. But it will be a very juicy pool. And again, at a 20-cent increment, you can jump in and put together a nice ticket. Ron, and I'm sure Jason and Acacia will probably have tickets that you can check out on their Twitter feeds or as we're watching during the afternoon as well. We had the selections from Brian Addo earlier on the handicapper support. You can pull those up, capitalotv.com, handicapping link, and then click on handicapper support. So plenty of ideas will be floating around to help you potentially put a ticket together. Kicks off in race number six this afternoon at Gulfstream Park. Scheduled post time about 2:44, 2:45. And I will note, we all know over the past couple of weeks, 3 weeks, if you've been watching Gulfstream, they're pretty much trying to hit on post time, except for a situation like this. They will certainly drag a little bit as the money comes into the pools. But expect it at about 2:45 this afternoon, race number six, the mandatory in the rainbow. Let me hit on a couple of the promos coming up before we go to the commercial break. Because today is a promotion day here at the Clubhouse Racebook. It's a match bet promotion. If you want to come down and have maybe a little extra fun, you can join the match bet promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook this afternoon. And tomorrow here at the Clubhouse, playoff Sunday, NFL Sundays continue. Clubhouse Racebook, watch all the football action and all the racing action throughout the season and beyond at the Clubhouse Racebook, 7-Eleven, Central Avenue in Albany. So today, match bet, tomorrow, NFL Sunday here at the Racebook. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we will jump in with some news and notes from this past week in racing. And then a little bit later on, our friend Tim Wilkin will join us. A little recap of some of the action from 2020 in the racing world. Maybe some thoughts on the Eclipse Awards. The ballots had to be in last Monday. So sooner rather than later, we will know who the 2020 Eclipse Award winners are. But we'll give some thoughts on the ballots and the potential candidates coming up with Tim a little bit later on as well. All of that when Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
anywhere's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Seth Merrill in the studio. Thanks for joining us. I mentioned it this week, but again, there are the folks who are working during the week and don't get to see OTB live, so pull some of the news over to Saturday morning as well. And the year-end numbers came out this week for the racing game, thoroughbred game. Really incredible. Given the situation with the pandemic and the two-three-month period with very limited racing earlier this year, wagering on U.S. races down less than 1%, 0.98%, 10.9 million versus 11 billion, 10.9 billion versus 11 million, 11 billion in 2019. So again, a modest decrease in wagering. Again, that's with a significant cutback in racing days. The racing days were cut back by 25%. The number of races cut back by 23%. Field size went up over 5%, about 5.5%. That's a big number. But the average wagering per race day, 32% increase. But again, just phenomenal, the numbers that were put up this year by bettors. And I said all along, I thought the racing game did a great job with the pandemic, the limited number of tracks that kept racing during that period, March and April. We had, Fawner, Will Rogers, Tampa, Gulfstream, Oaklawn. We had some good television coverage during the year. Things got juggled up, obviously, with the Triple Crown. But again, there was good coverage and good media coverage, given the situation with people kind of craving, certainly during that period in March and April when those five tracks are going, a lot of other sports were on the sidelines. So we had kind of a real window there to maybe develop some new fans. And hopefully that's the case. Hopefully we did get some new fans to jump on during this period. And when things come back to, you know, normal, as we get into later portions of this year, we will have a new fan base, a new element to the fan base that will still be there and maybe juice things up for this year over what we've done recently. But again, I just thought that the handle numbers went down less than 1% given the situation this year. Just absolutely phenomenal. On the harness side, the numbers weren't necessarily as good. Harness numbers with a year-to-year comparison were down 18%. So on the harness side, it wasn't quite as good. It was interesting, though. They broke down the numbers before COVID and after COVID. They had numbers from January 1st to March 22nd, and then June 1st to December 31st. And the before COVID period was down 5%, and the after COVID period was up 6%. So it was an interesting dynamic there, given, as I say, the comparison year to year before COVID and after COVID. But overall, numbers went down on the harness side fairly significantly. Again, even more significant given what we saw on the thoroughbred side, where things barely moved at all. The needle barely moved despite the entire situation. I think part of this, you know, I'm looking, race days were down over 31%. Purses were down 30%. So I think it was a little bit of a different dynamic also. Again, during that down period. We had some tracks still going on the thoroughbred side. There was some nice coverage, media coverage. I don't think that was necessarily the case for during that March, April, early May period on the harness side of things. It took them a little longer, I think, to get back going. And in some instances, I don't think they did get back going at some spots. And then, of course, the end of the year also, you lost some racing up at Woodbine Mohawk when things shut down up in Ontario again. The early closure of Woodbine Thoroughbred and the early closure also of Woodbine Mohawk. So that affected things as well. I mentioned earlier also news this week. My man, if you watch enough, you know, over the years I've talked quite a bit. Huge fan of Jonathan Shepherd. We've had him on the show up at Saratoga, and that was a lot of fun. Hall of Fame trainer who... as you read the articles with the stats and the career he had, just absolutely phenomenal. And I mean, he kind of made his name on the steeplechase side of things. But 56 years in the game, he went into the Hall of Fame 1990, I want to say. I think I have it. Yeah, Hall of Fame 1990. So the Hall of Fame career was a little more, you would think, based on his steeplechase runners. But he went in 1990, and then almost 20 years later, wins a Breeders' Cup with the Informed Decision, won a Breeders' Cup with Forever Together. One was a Filly and Mayor Sprint, one was a Filly and Mayor Turf. So certainly his career maybe was known early on the steeplechase side of things, but boy, it went far, far beyond that. 1985, actually, you know, before he got in the Hall of Fame, I say, based on his steeplechase career, but 1985, he had Stormcat, certainly a very notable runner who went on to a notable post-race career as well as a sire, but she's just phenomenal. You look at, as I say, the articles on Shepherd and his career. His horses won 15 Eclipse Award. That puts him only behind Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert. 11 of his individual winners have included two Hall of Fame members, Cafe Prince and Flatterer. His phenomenal record up at Saratoga, unfortunately, was snapped a few years ago, 2015. But through 2015, he had won at least one race at Saratoga for 47 years. Just phenomenal. And as I say, you know, early on may have been thought of as a steeplechase trainer, but subsequently had horses like Forever Together, who won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Turf, and Informed Decision, who won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Sprint. And we will, in fact, take a look at that Filly and Mayor Sprint from 2009. Again, showing kind of the depth and breadth of his career. Great steeplechase trainer, great grass trainer, but he also had the precocious Stormcat and a horse like this winning the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Sprint. We'll take a look at that 2009 race with Informed Decision for Jonathan Shepherd. Let's take a look at it right now.
And away they go to a perfect beginning. Informed Decision, the gray, is very fast into stride. Seventh Street in the white cap, ridden along a little, and now here comes the long shot, Free Flying Soul, and Free Flying Soul going on to lead them. Game Face in the gold colors is up a joint second. Down at the rail comes Sarah Louise, three lengths off the leaders. Silver Swallow is racing back in sixth. Down at the rail, we have Only Green being sent through on the inside to try to make a bit of headway. Now here's Ventura, second last, and Ventura's six lengths off the leaders. And Evita Argentina, as usual, no early speed. She's last, 10 off them. They run past the half-mile pole, still a long shot, Free Flying Soul in front of half a length, Informed Decision right there, second. 7th Street on the far side, and Sarah Louise tucked in at the rail in fourth. The gray is Silver Swallow. Alongside of that comes Game Face. Down at the rail, we have Only Green, who's been making pretty hard work of it. Ventura on the outside in the pink cabin. Evita Argentina's wound up early. Now Ventura and Evita Argentina, they're coming extremely wide because they have to, but they're coming fast. They have to get to Informed Decision, though. Informed Decision kicks on. Free Flying Souls running a huge one at the rail. Down the center, Ventura continues to make good headway. They come for home. It's Informed Decision. Ventura can't close the gap. Coming late, though. Informed Decision. Informed Decision 2 for Julian Leperoux. They've won the Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint. Ventura just couldn't get her. A big run from the long shot. Free Flying Soul in third. And then Sarah Louise.
In the Augustan colors, and that was those were the silks that I like to see up at Saratoga, because it seemed like very often Jonathan Shepherd would bring an Augustan runner up to Saratoga, who somewhere in the mid-Atlantic, Delaware maybe, had run an okay third and would come to Saratoga and because of that get overlooked a little bit and offer up a big price over the years. I scored out on a number of those type of horses. But Informed Decision, again, just shows the depth and breadth of the career, as I said earlier, not just steeplechase runners and not just turf runners, but a filly and mare Breeders' Cup sprint winner in Informed Decision. Forever Together, as I say, also a Breeders' Cup winner, Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf in 2008. She had a nice career. She won the Diana up at Saratoga in 2008 as well, did Forever Together. I also pulled up the record from one of those horses that I kind of referred to a moment ago in Crowd Pleaser. And this is going back a ways, but this is one that I remember because it was a Shepherd horse I played and had and was part of my Shepherd legacy, Crowd Pleaser. Now, this is going back away. Crowd Pleaser ran mostly the late 90s through the year 2000. But going back to 1998 up at Saratoga, Crowd Pleaser had come into Saratoga off a fourth place finish at Delaware, ran in an allowance event early in the Saratoga meet, 1998. That day didn't go off at a big price off the fourth place finish at Delaware, but one paid $7.90. That was on August 7th, 1998. Comes out of that victory, however, and at the end of the meet, September 5th, goes in the Saranac. Goes off at 28-1, the longest price in the field of seven, and wins that one at $59 and change. And those are the kind of Shepherd horses, Shepherd Augustan runners that, you know, kind of, I remember, made it fun for me, made Shepherd a guy that I followed year in and year out at Saratoga. And again, with at least one win for 47 years, if folks were like me and kind of jumping on board and looking at Jonathan Shepherd, you wound up on the right side of things more often than not. If not on the number of wins, when you get a $59, $60 winner, you don't have to have too many of those during the meet or over the years to make things turn out nicely. So again, Jonathan Shepherd, and he said in the various articles, and I think if you go to Equidaily, I'm sure I have linked the Blood Horse article, which was a nice long article that kind of paid tribute to his career. And he said, you know, just turned 80 and wanted to kind of go out on top, and he had some wins up at Saratoga this year. So again, it gives him the opportunity to kind of you know, bid adieu to the game on his terms. And again, on a high level, having won some Saratoga wins. And his Winston C was the top steeplechase runner last year. So again, after a long career, he goes out still showing he is Jonathan Shepherd. He will have a small string over in Ireland, including, I believe, Winston C. So it'll be fun to kind of follow him from afar. But he is retired, Jonathan Shepherd, from American Racing. So unfortunate, but again, after 50-some year career playing at the highest level, we wish him all the luck and congratulations on a great career. Media Eclipse Awards were announced this week, and it's always fun to look at the media photograph, the Eclipse-winning photograph of the year, and you can go back online and look year in and year out. And they're always fun. It's always fun to look at, you know, some of the also-rans as well, because I, particularly these days with everybody having a camera out there and whatnot, you can see and really the technology even being different, where you press down on the trigger and you get a string of 10 shots. The professional photographers do great. The amateur photographers looking at Twitter do great jobs as well. But as I say, it's fun to see what was named as the top photograph of the year. And the winning picture this year was from Alex Evers. And it's a winning picture, I think, because of what it says about 2020. This is the Kentucky Derby. And what it says about 2020 is this is the Kentucky Derby, with the field coming around the clubhouse turn and nobody there. So again, it doesn't just capture horse racing. It captures a moment in time, a moment in our generational time with the situation here in 2020 with the pandemic. I think it was a nice choice. And again, it was Alex Evers, the winning photographer. That was his first Eclipse Award. September 5th, the 15-horse field in the Kentucky Derby coming around the clubhouse turn without much there. He's quoted as saying, "It was a unique day. There was an eerie feeling of emptiness at the track, and I wanted to juxtapose that against the massive group of horses. The elevation of the shot with the ladder was the key, pulling back wide and showing the row of empty seats in front of the track as the horses went by." As I say, that is the key, because it's a horse racing photograph, obviously, but it tells much, much more. It's something that, you know, 20 years down the line will mean something to people when they talk 2020 and the pandemic. Hey, take a look at the shot of the Kentucky Derby, normally 150,000 people, and there it is, 2020, essentially empty other than the horses coming around the clubhouse turn. So again, a nice photograph named the Eclipse winner for 2020. Alex Evers, congratulations. The Eclipse Awards themselves, the Media Eclipse Awards, are a little bit different. They have their own separate panels that judge them. So the Media Eclipse Awards come out a couple of weeks ahead of the actual Eclipse winners. But those will be out sooner rather than later. As I said, a little bit earlier this week on Monday, I and other voters had to have our ballots in. It was just maybe 3 weeks ago or so, we got our package with the PPs. Again, these were sent out probably with 2 weeks left in the year. So as the year ended, online, you could go and catch up with any PPs that maybe happened after, or the year-end stats on the human side of the game. Those are available online for voters. And then on Monday, end of the afternoon on Monday, you had to have your votes in. 50th Annual Eclipse Awards, they will be announced on January 28th. But I invited in our friend Tim Wilkin. We'll talk to him after the break, and we'll kind of recap a little bit the year 2020 in horse racing, and also get some of his ideas and some of my thoughts on the Eclipse Awards and directions we may have tilted in as far as when the ballots went out earlier this week. So we'll take a break. And when we come back, we will be joined by our friend Tim Wilkin from the Times Union. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Horses racing, people betting. It's been going on since before the Roman Empire. And the fastest horse is still the one that wins. Where there's gambling, there's cheating. that hasn't changed either. What has changed are the tools used to combat doping and cheaters. Today, professional horse racing operates under an aggressive anti-doping program, testing labs on par with the Olympics, and standards tougher than human sport. For 85 years, the Association of Racing Commissioners International has fought for safe horses and honest sport. ARCI standards form the basis for the rules of racing. Today, they call for a new expanded program to protect all horses, young and old. To join with them or learn more, visit ARCI.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, a little recap of 2020, some thoughts maybe on the Eclipse Awards as well with our friend Tim Wilkin. And I was talking during the break. I said, Tim, how do I refer to you now? Semi-retired? Tim, of course, the longtime sports writer for the Times Union, but now concentrating on the racing game. And as we were talking during the break, the racing game has had enough news over the past couple of weeks that you've still been sitting at the typewriter or the computer keyboard, as it were. Tim, good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate some of the conversation. And one of the things you said you were writing about, and I'll start out with that because it was a little bit of a disappointment to end kind of an overall disappointing 2020, but the retirement of Tiz the Law, you covered that. As I say, a little bit disappointing. We won't get to see him as a four-year-old. But I will say, and I'll get your thoughts on this too, I did a little, about 3 weeks ago, a little thing for Capital OTB on our social media, put together my top 10 races of the year. And I have to admit, as a homer, a lot of them were based at Saratoga. My top race of the year, the Travers and Tiz the Law. Talk a little bit about your thoughts, the Tiz the Law career of 2020, and as I say, the disappointment at the end of the year when he wound up retired.
Yeah, I mean, when you were talking about your race of the year being the Travers, I mean, how can you go, you can't really go wrong with that one. It was Tiz the Law's best performance of his career. He had 109 buyer. It was a dominating performance. The worst part of it was no one there to see it, really, except for the owners. But, you know, Tiz the Law had, you know, a spectacular career, albeit short. I mean, four grade ones in his career, three of them this year. Second in the Kentucky Derby. He did run a dud in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and that's unfortunately his last race. I was really looking forward to seeing him, what he would do in the Pegasus with Johnny Velasquez on board, but obviously that's not going to happen. He's going to go down as one of the best New York breds we've ever seen, and you know it's unfortunate for the Saratoga people, who you know became a story in themselves. You know, it was the lightning in the bottle type thing for their, you know, the first time they had a big horse since Funny Side, and you know they're people that it's easy to root for, but now that it's over, you know, you hope that Tiz the Law can make little Tiz the Laws that are just as good as he was. You know, it was a tough story to see, you know, that it was over for him, because it was just over so quickly for him. But they did the right thing. I mean, they detected something off with Robin Smolin, detected something wrong with him after a morning gallop. And, you know, they said if he would have continued on, they could have had a catastrophic injury. And, you know, that would have been just horrible. So they did the right thing and by being right by the horse. And I'm sure it was disappointing for Jack Knowlton and his crew, but it's part of the game and they all know that. So, you know, having Tiz the Law is, even though we had him just for a little while, it was a lot of fun for everybody involved. And a lot of people around here who might not even follow horse racing that much got attached to that horse as well, I thought.
Yeah, and we on the handicapper support earlier, we went over the Gulfstream card. They have a nice little first-time starter in the fifth race today, Blitz to Win. Nice 46 right. And change workout coming into that, so I'll tell people to look at that one and root for Saratoga to maybe have another nice New York bred. But I'll fold in just in kind of your thoughts on the pandemic year, and it ties in nicely with Tiz the Law, because you and I were both over at Pinnell's when Tiz the Law ran in the Belmont Stakes, and we had to be there because at that point in the pandemic, nobody was allowed down at Belmont. And so the Sacatoga folks had their watch party up there, and you said folks were tied in, and it was kind of fun. After he won the Belmont Stakes, at one point a bunch of people on bicycles rode through the parking lot and were waving and cheering, and obviously fans of the horse who had watched at home and knew the gang was at Pinnell's, and so they popped on over. But in a, as I say, tie it into your thoughts on the pandemic year, I've said all year long, I think the racing game did a great job given the situation. There were those five tracks that kept going March and April that kept us alive, great TV coverage, and kind of doing what they could. The owners, the trainers, the fans, and that Pinnell situation with the Belmont Stakes. I think the racing game did a good job last year. And I read earlier that the Equibase national numbers that came out, the handle was down less than 1%.
Yeah. I mean, horse racing was for a while was the only game in town. That's the only thing you could watch on TV and sports. And as Todd Pletcher said to me more than once, horse racing plays well on television.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, and the job that Naira did when they were allowed to begin, you know, to resume racing in June, that the shows they produced were just, you know, high quality, really good stuff. I mean, it was something that, you know, the race fans never really had to lose a beat, even though, you know, some of the races, you know, the tracks were closed for a while, but they really never had to lose a beat. If they wanted to get some action, there was always action to be had. And, you know, as we talked many times about, you know, the pandemic and no fans at Saratoga, it was one of the most surreal things I've ever been a part of, not having people at Saratoga. I mean, to have, you know, not having a full grandstand when the field was coming down the stretch at the Travers or the Whitney or the Alabama. And so, you know, those performances we saw from those horses, and we were the only ones there really to see it. It was just really weird. I mean, it was, I thought we were at the Overlook Hotel.
That's very good. And I pulled up one of those, and I'll tie it in also to the Eclipse thoughts. I pulled up the Alabama, and the guys can maybe show the stretch run here, Swiss Skydiver. And that to me, I've said it a million times, that to me was one of the disappointments of the Saratoga meet. We saw so many performances like this. Tis the Law. We're watching Swiss Skydiver now in the Alabama, a couple of races before she wins the Preakness. And Kenny McPeak in the Winner's Circle afterwards said, you know, maybe we'll think about the Derby, maybe. And they wound up going in the Oaks and then following up with the win in the Preakness. But this was just a phenomenal performance by Swiss Skydiver in the Alabama. Gamine in the Test. There were just so many great performances this year. It was absolutely disappointing that the fans couldn't watch them. But I mentioned Swiss Skydiver and tying that into the Eclipse. For me, she winds up as the three-year-old filly. Gamine, I put second, and I put her on top the filly and mayor sprint category. So I kind of split them up. But Swiss Skydiver, to me, with the Alabama, the win over the boys in the Preakness, winds up with the three-year-old filly Eclipse vote.
No, he must be clairvoyant or something, because I had the exact same thing for the three-year-old fillies. I had Swiss Skydiver on top, being second. I actually put She Dares the Devil third. And in the I put Gamine as the top female sprinter. I mean, I know that some people were poo-pooing the notion of having any of the Baffert horses on top, because, you know, he did have some positives this year. Gamine was one of them. But, you know, Gamine didn't have a positive when she was dominating the Test and then the Breeders' Cup, you know, and the race she had in New York. I mean, she is a quality filly, and I don't think you can penalize her for that that positive that she had. And, you know, if you believe Bob, and I do, that it was contamination. So, I mean, I think that you have to give these horses their due, and Gamine, it being the top female sprinter, and, you know, and second is the best three-year-old filly, that was my vote too.
Yeah, she was just phenomenal. The Test, and then the Breeders' Cup filly and mayor sprint, just hard to ignore that. Get some of your other thoughts. Let's go right to Horse of the Year, because again, it's a Baffert horse, but I thought with the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic, and we'll take a look at the stretch run to the Classic, I thought Authentic not only got the three-year-old vote for me, but also the horse of the year, given the win in the Breeders' Cup Classic against Older. The three-year-old male, I had Tis the Law right in the second slot. Again, we talked about his performance in the Traverse. That was phenomenal. I would have loved to put him on top. But again, with the Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic, it seemed like a slam dunk for Authentic.
I agree 100% on that. I mean, I don't know how you can't give the three-year-old and Horse of the Year to Authentic. I mean, he won the Kentucky Derby. I mean, he won the Breeders' Cup Classic. And he did it very impressively both times, you know, going to the lead and Catch Me If You Can, and no one could catch him. Authentic was, you know, I remember back in the, when he won the Haskell, people were saying that they didn't think he'd be a mile and a quarter horse because the Safi Joseph horse was, now that name escapes me,
New York Traffic.
Yeah, New York Traffic was you know, picking him up at the end. It almost looked like he was going to go by him, but, you know, Authentic proved that he was a mile and a quarter a horse, and, you know, I don't know how you can't give him Horse of the Year as well as the three-year-old, and I would be surprised if he doesn't win by a mile in the Horse of the Year. I put Monomoy Girl second in Horse of the Year, and my third choice was Tis the Law, but that might be more of a homer pick because of what he did up here. And as far as the three-year-old male, my third choice was Happy Saver, the Todd Pletcher horse, who won Jockey Club Gold Cup. And that was, you know, and then he was done for the year. But I don't know how you can not go Authentic in those categories.
Yeah, I totally agree. Older Dirt Male was a little bit of a question mark. I went with Improbable over Vekoma. Knicks go in the third spot. But that was there was a few categories that were slam dunks. I thought on the two-year-old side, Essential Quality was a slam dunk. You mentioned Monomoy Girl earlier. She was a slam dunk and a great story in the Older Dirt Female. But the Older Dirt Male was one where I didn't think anybody was totally jumping off the page necessarily. I went with Improbable.
I went with Improbable, too. I went with Improbable first, Vekoma second, and Global Campaign third. I mean, Improbable was, you know, you look at what he did back in the Whitney. I mean, he was an impressive winner there, and, you know, he didn't run a bad race in the Breeders' Cup Classic either. So, you know, I thought that, you know, again, it's going to come down to all these people saying, well, that's a Baffert horse. He must have been on something, which I don't agree with at all. But, you know, Improbable to me was, I mean, not a slam dunk in the older horse, but, he was my pick for the Older Dirt Male for sure.
Older Dirt Female, I'm assuming you agree, Monomoy Girl. I mean, as I say, she was just a great story as well, taking all that time off and coming back and having the 4-for-4 campaign, including the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So hats off to Brad Cox and company, the ownership group in particular, for having the patience to do what they did with the horse, but then the success this year as well.
Yeah, that was my top pick for Older Dirt Female. And no, it's great that we'll be able to see her run again this year. So it's you're right. That was one of the better stories in racing. That, you know, the year we had in racing, the sport was crying for really good stories, and we did get a bunch of them with the likes of Monomoy Girl and Tis the Law.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the categories that, again, were like Older Dirt Male, a little more of a head-scratcher for me. Male Sprinter, I went with Vekoma. I put Volatile in the second spot, and then Whitmore. I'm going to be interested to see how that one shakes out, because a lot of people give a lot of credit to the Breeders' Cup Sprint, which Whitmore won, and I'm not going to argue with that. As I say, I didn't have total confidence in this one, but I thought Vekoma with the 3-for-3 record and the Met Mile, I tilted slightly in that direction in the sprint category.
Well, I have the same three, but in different order. I gave it to Whitmore. It might be more of a sentimental pick because, you know, the old man finally won the sprint in his fourth try. And that's another great story that we had this year. And, you know, if you look at what other horses may have done more than him this year, but he did win the big one on the biggest day. So that's why I tilted a little bit towards Whitmore in the sprinter, male sprinter.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with that at all. I just thought the 3-for-3 campaign tilted me slightly towards Vekoma. I'm interested to see where you went in the turf categories, because those were the two that I had to, you know, think over the most? And in the male turf category, I went with Channel Maker. In the female turf category, I went with Rushing Fall. But as I say, I'm not feeling super confident about either of those. But Channel Maker had just enough for me on the male side. And as I say, Rushing Fall, again, that kind of a nice story also. Your thoughts in the two turf categories?
You know, Seth, I had Channel Maker second. This is a tough one for me, too.
Yeah.
I put Zulu Alpha on top, even though, you know, he didn't run in the Breeders' Cup. But he had a good season.
Yeah.
You know, he was 3-for-5, and I didn't think that, I didn't think that there was anything that stood out, jumped off the page at me. Like, yes, Channel Maker was a consistent horse, but he also, I mean, he only had 2 wins in 8 starts, even though he was, third in the Breeders' Cup. So I think that that one, I think, is going to be a very close. Finish as to who gets it. I wouldn't be surprised if Channel Maker gets it, but I just a slight edge I gave to Zulu Alpha. And in the female, I have Rushing Fall second, and I did something I usually don't do, for the top pick in this race. I mean, for this category, I picked Dermot Weldhorse, who won the Breeders' Cup Turf.
I was going to ask you your thoughts on that, because I you kind of alluded to it. I think you typically think the same way. I want to see at least a couple starts in this country, but I'm not going to argue that those aren't the rules, and so I wouldn't argue anybody using Tarnawa off the Breeders' Cup win and the year she had over in Europe. If that, you then consider that as well, and I think the rules don't say anything against it, so I'm not arguing against it, but it's interesting that you went in that direction, because your lead-up seems to indicate, normally you feel the way I do, that maybe you'd like to see some more North American starts.
Yeah, and, are the Eclipse Awards, are they supposed to be worldwide? I mean, I think they are usually considered basically just for U.S. horses, but the horses that raced over here, and if you don't race over here enough, should you be allowed to be even on the ballot? But if you win a Breeders' Cup Classic race, there's a lot of different moving parts on this one.
And again, there wasn't anybody else in the category that was necessarily jumping off the page at you to go in another direction. So I wouldn't argue with that at all necessarily. But again, it was interesting. And I mentioned the 2-year-old categories. We didn't touch on those. I thought Essential Quality was a slam dunk on the male side, and pretty much VQuist probably on the female side too, as far as the 2-year-olds.
I agree 100% on both those. Those are my two picks in the juvenile categories.
Yeah, Essential Quality, a solid year. Going to be interesting to see how these 2-year-olds move forward. Speaking of that, and Baffert, how about Life is Good last week? There were 3 notable 3-year-old races last year, New York, Florida, and Southern California. Capo Kane in New York, nice horse. I don't know whether that's going to be a Derby contender. Muta Sabik down in Florida for Todd Pletcher. I didn't like going into the race, but came out probably looking pretty good. But of the 3, I think Life is Good out in Southern California was the one from last weekend that we have to pay attention to for Baffert.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I talked to Bob, actually, the night that Charlton won the Malibu. And I said, boy, you got a big shot already for the Derby with Life is Good. He says, that's one of several. So it looks to me, though, if that's right, it looks like Bob's going to have a loaded barn of 3-year-olds, as he always does, as we head to the classics.
Yeah, incredible. Year in and year out. Oh, surprise, another live one from Baffert. So we'll see some of those down at Oaklawn for sure, and some other venues also. Next week down in New Orleans, LeCompte weekend, they'll draw those today. Going to be interesting to see who shows up down there as we are along the Derby Trail. And I assume along the Derby Trail, and you mentioned before we went on the air, you'll probably have something coming out on the Eclipse Awards, which will be announced in a couple of weeks. But the Times Union folks can still look for your coverage as far as horse racing, not just at Saratoga, but Triple Crown Trail and beyond is also, correct?
That's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I think we're going to do. So I'm not going to be too far away from the computer, I don't think.
Well, I said when you announced that you were taking your buyout and stepping away from full-time sports coverage, but you also said, but still be covering horse racing for the Times Union, I said, phew, because for a minute there I thought, well, no Tim in the press box up in Saratoga, but you will be up there this coming summer. Always some great stories, and always have a few laughs up there, and also enjoying the great racing, which, again, you and I were lucky enough to be able to do this year, along with some of the other folks, Mike McAdam in the press box, in the auxiliary press box,
Kurt
which
Barrett.
I got to like quite a bit. I'm hoping somehow we work that out again this year. That was a nice venue there, but it was very different, but luckily enough, we were there to witness some really great performances in 2020.
Yeah, it was you, me, Mike McAdam, a couple others, and the Pigeons.
That's right. One of whom disrespected my computer the opening week from the rafters.
Yeah, I got one of them bombed mine, too. So we weren't alone in that. It was the thing. You know, every day someone from the Naira maintenance crew had to come up and wash the floors up there after the Pigeons had their party the night before. So it was... And they did. Thank goodness they did that, or we would have been like we were sitting in a cage in a zoo.
And then there were a couple of days where the hawk flew down looking for some of the pigeons. And on those days, we were pigeon free when the hawk showed up.
Yeah, yeah. When the hawk showed up, everything was good in our world. Maybe we should have paid him more. He would have been around more.
But again, it was very different up there. Hopefully, I've been knocking wood for months now. Hopefully, this vaccine turns things around and we get back to normal, quote unquote, sooner rather than later. And hopefully, Saratoga. I was out in the front half of the race book yesterday talking with some folks who are looking forward to maybe being on track this year at Saratoga. I hope that is the case. As I say, 2020 was a nice year for racing. On track and with the handle and whatnot, a little bit disappointing that virtually every venue had at least limited fans. So in a year where there were really nice performances, it was unfortunate that they weren't able to be watched live in a lot of situations. But they're now in the record books. We can pull them up and watch the videos. And hopefully this year that will turn around. And we will also be able to count on your coverage of all that racing, Tim. So we're looking forward to that in 2021 as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, too. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to and very much hoping that the gates get opened up again so people can come in, not only for the track's sake, but also for the town's sake, because
yeah.
A lot of those businesses up there really struggled. And because of the fact that there weren't any people up there, I mean, I hope everything gets back to normal sooner than later. And, you know, it would be great to be able to have a full house at Saratoga every day because, you know, it just was just a weird, weird feeling being up there all for the 40 days of Saratoga and very limited number of people up there at once they did allow the owners in. I mean, having, you know, a couple hundred people in there for Traverse Day was just eerie,
yeah.
You know, just very eerie. I mean, could you imagine what the sound would have been like in there watching Tis the Law roll down the stretch? If the place was packed, it would have been the noise meter would have been off the charts.
Rachel Alexandra in the Woodward sound level, I'm guessing, and hopefully we get back.
Yeah,
we get back to that this year. Tim, appreciate the visit. Looking forward to reading your racing commentary and thoughts and coverage in the Times Union going forward. Look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Sounds good, Seth. I feel the same way talking with you.
All right, Tim Wilkin, Albany Times Union. You can still find his horse racing coverage in the TU. Looking forward to that as we go forward in 2021. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. Once again, a reminder, the Rainbow Six today at Gulfstream has a mandatory payout. I'm expecting upwards of maybe $5-6 million at least. scheduled to go off in the sixth race at about 3:15 this afternoon. So keep that in mind. Rainbow Six mandatory at Gulfstream Park. I'll be back in an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. They're about to kick off the pregame show down at Naira, so I will wrap things up, send it to the Big A, Anthony Stabile, and Andy Serlings for some thoughts on Aqueduct for this Saturday afternoon. And as I say, I'll see you in about an hour and a half or so. Stay tuned.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.